Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We're just making sure everybody was connected, and Mike Bowen, our marvelous engineer, was giving a minute-by-minute account. So we I think as of right now, we have everybody accounted for. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday. It's the 1st of September. It's a new month, ladies and gentlemen. Yay. We're going to have a lot to talk about, and we will get right to it. Let me introduce the group to you. A reminder, you can always join us and be a part of the group by emailing us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. It's as simple as that. Please use that email address. Keep your emails short and to the point. And, yeah, if you've written us, you know, say 6, 7, 8 times in the last half hour, that's probably good. You know, one a day, one per customer is fine. And I think that's all I have for rules. We may add to the list a little bit later on. Good morning to our panel, Alan Shartok. Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, Joe. It's very nice of you to ask. I have to say that I have a particular message for Rosemary, who, as you know.
Rosemary's here. Yep, go ahead.
Who, as you know, gets a little crazy when I mention the words FI or Fire Island. So, 50 years from September 6th, I will have married Roselle. In the back porch on Fire Island. So we thought to celebrate our birthday, our anniversary day, we would go out, take the ferry out, look at the house where we were married, bond, and come back. What do you think about that?
I think that's lovely.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to do.
I mean,
50 years.
I think that's cool. Yeah.
50 years is a long time, isn't it?
It really is. God bless her.
That's what she says.
The other voice you hear here is investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Rosemary, good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Mike Spain is former Times Union associate editor. Good morning, Mike. Welcome.
Good morning. Very happy to be here. And congratulations, Alan and Roselle. Hope to join you guys in a couple years, my wife Debbie and I. You know, very important date.
Absolutely.
That's youngsters that you are.
Yes, right.
And Malcolm Nance joins us, counterterrorism expert and best-selling author. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
I think it's a lovely start to this morning with that story. I adore you both.
Well, it is a good way to start because the rest of the news, quite frankly, sucks. So we'll, we'll go with that. All right. So let us begin with what's going on. So Joe Biden came out swinging yesterday, calling Trump a toxic presence who is encouraging violence in America. He excoriated the president as a threat to the safety of all Americans, saying he was a toxic presence who has encouraged violence in the nation's streets, even as he faltered in handling the coronavirus pandemic. The direct repudiation of Trump came as Biden and the president launched into a caustic debate over violent protests that have escalated across the country in recent days, thrusting the presidential campaign into a new and more combustible phase centered on which man represents the biggest danger to America. For his most extensive remarks since violence has broken out in recent days, Biden traveled to Pittsburgh and struck a centrist tone, condemning both the destruction in the streets and Trump for creating a culture that he has said has exacerbated it. Speaking in a crucial electoral battleground state, the Democratic presidential nominee appeared to aim his remarks at anxious members of his party as well as voters who may have reconsidered their support of him in light of Trump's relentless efforts to paint Biden as a candidate willing to tolerate lawlessness. So all of this comes, of course, with protests that continue in Portland and in Wisconsin. The president, for his part, is visiting Kenosha, Wisconsin today. This as both the governor and the mayor of Kenosha pleaded with him, please do not come. The president is expected then to get a chilly reception from state and local leaders when he brings his campaign message of law and order to Kenosha. So on that, we go to Alan Shartok.
Well, I don't have much to say. I want to pass to the other guys who know so much about this and who really are my heroes when it comes to laying it all out. But I do want to say one thing, and that is that, pardon me again. I do want to say that I thought I wouldn't have changed one word of what Biden said. I mean, I think he had it exactly right. It was the right tone. It was the right thing to say. He's against the violence, so am I, and I've been saying so at some risk from people who disagree with me and say it's all a matter of frustration. No, you don't burn, you don't loot, you don't do that stuff. And he reassured the American people that that's not where he is, but at the same time, he said that Trump is responsible for this. He set up the toxic situation which we're in, and he insists on making it worse all the time. Gasoline on the fire. Why? Because it's the way he sees to his election. And that's all I got to say for this.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, gasoline on the fire. That's a perfect metaphor. You know, it's not a new tactic. You know, you remember after Charlottesville in 2017, you know, Trump kind of made very little distinction between the white supremacists and the people that they were plowing down in the streets who were protesting racism. And, you know, scaring people is very effective. Demagogues have used it. Leaders have used it around the world, saying people have to turn to him for a solution to end the strife. I mean, and, you know, it's just not a word about the root cause of this violence and turmoil in cities, you know, poverty, injustice, racial inequality. None of that. No, he talks about law and order, and it's making people very nervous, and he's offering a solution, him. And Biden's right. This is Donald Trump's America now. This is not Joe Biden's America.
I just want to throw in, I mean, this is a separate story, but it obviously is very much a part of what we're discussing. But the president yesterday at his news conference attacked Biden for condemning violence, but not specifically left-wing perpetrators of it. And then he ultimately gave support to Kyle Rittenhouse, the Trump supporter who was charged with murder in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as well as other Trump supporters. Trump found little fault with any of them. He noted that at least the paintballs weren't bullets and called it a peaceful protest. His quote, "Well, I understand they had large numbers of people that were supporters, but that was a peaceful protest, and pain is not, and pain is as a defensive mechanism, pain is not bullets. These people, they protested peacefully, they went in peacefully." Trump then pointed to a man who identifies as an anti-fascist and who is under investigation in the killing of a right-wing demonstrator after a Trump rally in Portland. Trump said the man shot a young gentleman and killed him not with paint but with a bullet, and I think that's disgraceful. The president offered no such condemnation, though, when it was noted that one of his supporters, Rittenhouse, has been charged with killing with actual bullets in Kenosha. "That was an interesting situation," Trump said. "You saw the same tape as I saw, and he was trying to get away from them. I guess it looks like he fell, and then they were violently attacked him. And it was something that we're looking at right now, and it's under investigation. But I guess he was in very big trouble. He would have been, probably would have been killed, but it's under investigation." Rosemary.
I think every minute that we spend talking about violence and what Biden said versus what Trump says is a win for Trump. He wants the debate to be about violence, and he will win that. Yes, I think everything Biden said was correct, but I'm on one half, the liberal half of a very equal divide. And Trump will win the debate on violence, I think. Law and order and fear are so powerful in this country that he wins it. Instead, why are we not talking about almost 200,000 people dead because he mismanaged COVID? Why aren't we talking about a foreign policy system that's in shambles because he screwed it up? Why aren't we talking about jobs lost and the economy in shambles and no hope for the future for things like, oh, say, Social Security? Why aren't we talking about his many failures, his record in office? Instead, we're talking about violence in the street. Of course, everyone condemns it, and they're nitpicking about. I'm listening to you this morning, Joe, and it's really hard to say who's right and who's wrong because they're like scrunching, parsing the argument. That gives power to Trump, I think.
The president of the United States is defending somebody who shot two people, though.
No, he's done it before. And he won. He has won on this before. He is a gun advocate. He is a protect your property and your person guy. He's a law and order guy without the right to law. We know all of this, and he's been elected on that. We have to listen to Michael Moore. The enthusiasm for him is very high, and it's high among people who think exactly the same way.
Malcolm.
Well, all of this is a tragedy, but Rosemary's absolutely right. This is where he wants to go. In fact, around July 2016, he started this very same campaign where he started complaining about violence in U.S. cities and how these things had to be put down. And he established himself, his theme at that time, as the law and order president. He sees it as a winning playbook. And it is a giant distraction from the fact that we have almost 200,000 dead Americans. 6 million Americans have been infected with coronavirus and may have long-term consequences to that. We don't know yet. I mean, it's literally someone, I think somebody said the number is, something like a couple of thousand 9/11s, and his group of supporters, they don't care. They go around on because Trump has set the pace without masks. They don't particularly care. They don't particularly believe that this virus is real. This is devastating the economy. It's devastating schools, and it has now split the nation in two between believers and unbelievers. But you also see this stoking of violence by Trump supporting armed militias. And in fact, the gunman from Kenosha, Kyle Rittenhouse, was driven there. This 17-year-old kid who could not legally possess a firearm was driven there by his mother, who bought him that firearm. Now, where have we heard that before? Newtown, the mother of the mass murderer in Newtown, bought him the AR-15 and he went to he killed her, went to the school. This is going to get out of control. I'm saying that as an intelligence professional. I have been around extremist groups for over 35 years. And let me tell you that caravan in Portland, I will say it out loud and proudly. The only other place that I have seen anything like that were the ISIS parades in Mosul and other parts of Iraq as they invaded places. They really think that they are a force amongst themselves. And I've seen them, for those of you who go up to Great Barrington, I sat up there last Saturday and one truck went back and forth down Main Street. They have the belief in what they're doing. They have that motivation because they are almost of a cult-like organization of which they see their greatness in Donald Trump's lies. And they do not care about the rest of us. And this is where our concern of voters should come from. We live in reality. They live in an alternate universe where every American major city is on fire. As a matter of fact, one last point. The head of the right-wing extremist group, the Oath Keepers, 2 days ago said that the murder of the Patriot Prayer right-wing extremists in Portland should be considered the first shot of the Civil War, and that he encouraged Trump to nationalize the National Guard in every state and take back America by storm. That sounds far-fetched and extreme, but we have seen this president respond to these messages, and I would be very careful for us to dismiss his listening to those far extremist voices.
Alan, we were just heard from Rosemary, who was talking about that any discussion on this by us and by Biden is a win for Trump. But Biden has to say something, right? I mean, he has to insert himself in this.
Well, I think what Biden did and said was absolutely correct, because he has to give reassurance to the American people that this technique of Trump's, which is to talk about keeping people safe, is a bunch of nonsense, and that it is he, Trump, who has, as I said before, poured the gasoline on the fire, and that it is his presidency, not Biden's presidency, but his, and we are living in chaos now because of him. So that I have great respect for Rosemary. I think she's right. We do deviate from the central messages of COVID and all the other things that we need to be paying, and the economy need to be paying attention to. And from that point of view, she's absolutely right. He does win. Nevertheless, you cannot leave it unanswered. You know, Mario used to say to me and to everybody else, every assertion of that kind has to be answered. And he did it, and I thought he did it extremely well. This is not in any way.
In the meantime, Trump control. Trump is, as he always has since the minute he entered this race, is controlling the narrative. And lost are so many of the things that we most care about as Democrats and liberals. Where's the discussion about inequality? Where's the discussion about police brutality? If you're talking about whether the 17-year-old how he had the right to do what he did, it's lost. It gets lost in this endless constitutional discussion about the Second Amendment.
And Rosemary.
That is to his favor. That's to Trump's favor.
Just have less than 30 seconds. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Rosemary, about that. But what would you have wanted Biden to do? Not answer this stuff? He had to say something. I think he did it right.
All right. We're going to take a pause there. We'll come back and talk more about this. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance on the panel this morning. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Just before we were going to the break, we were talking about the protests, and also made mention of the fact that the president will be visiting Kenosha, Wisconsin today. The former vice president Joe Biden and the Democratic candidate for president was asked if he would be going, and he said, "We are looking into it." Alan, is it a good idea for Joe Biden to go to Kenosha?
Well, I think if the message is right, it would be the right thing for him to do. But the message has to be right. In other words, what's the rationale for his going? Other than the fact that he's showing that he's not unwilling to go toe-to-toe with the greatest bully of our times, who is Donald Trump. And he won't be debating him there, of course. But not showing up sends a negative message that he may be afraid of him. And I don't think he should be doing that.
Rosemary?
Well, I want Joe Biden to step out and make his own message. Why, instead of going to Kenosha, why doesn't he go to a hospital in the middle of the hotspot and talk about mismanagement of COVID? Why doesn't he go to the home of someone, maybe George Floyd's family in nearby, not Kenosha, which is just the newest outrage, and talk about policies that the Trump administration has perpetrated that has exacerbated police brutality and distrust of police? He's got to make the message his own. He's not. It's a very defensive stand. Alan, you said it. What is he supposed to do if Trump says this? He has to answer it. That's how bullies win, by turning you into defense rather than offense. And Joe Biden has fallen for that. So are all the Democrats.
But he can do both, right? I mean, he can also
go. He could,
go...
but he isn't.
Well, he hasn't done much yet. In other words, this is just the beginning. And I think the Democrats are playing it extremely smart. First of all, they nominated Biden. That was a very smart thing, as we now see. I mean, I don't want to get that one started again, but we do see it. We do understand that his moderation is what is winning the day. And I want to point out to this minute that every single poll that comes out, Rosemary, for whatever it's worth, show Biden with a fairly substantial lead. Not overwhelming, but anywhere from 6 to 11 points, or 5 to 11 points. So it's not enough, obviously, to win the election with, but I don't think we can fault the Democratic strategy and what they're doing so far.
I am having horrible deja vu to the days of the Hillary campaign, when she also had that exact same unwavering margin, and it's so small compared to the offenses that that president has committed. Danger, Will Roger.
I keep telling you, and I mean it. Joe Biden is not Hillary. Hillary had a large cadre of people who did not like her, for one reason or another. The Clintons, the money, the speeches, the this, the that. They didn't like her. Some of them were wrong about some of the silliest things of all, was that she wasn't rough enough on Bill. I love that one. You know, but, you know, it was all silliness. But this is not Biden. Biden is not that person. And I want to point it out.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah.
And should the president go, or should the vice president, should Biden go to Kenosha?
Well, I think Rosemary's right. It's very important that Biden doesn't let Trump define all the issues and define him. Biden, I think it was right to challenge Trump to join him in denouncing violence on every level. That was a smart move. It sets a tone. But he does need to break out and define himself. You know, the coronavirus, every minute we talk about Kenosha or Portland or Minnesota or whatever, we're not talking about the terrible, terrible tragedy we're being inflicted with every single day. It's like a couple of airplanes full of people crash and everyone's killed every single day in the United States of people. That's the number of people dying from coronavirus. It gets up over 1,000, it goes down to 500, and it goes back up to 800. But it's a terrible tragedy. And now you have the Trump administration. I know you guys covered this yesterday on the roundtable. But they bring in this fella, Atlas, from the Hoover Institute, who basically is promoting the plan that Sweden had. Let everybody get coronavirus. The weak people will die and get sick and die, and all the healthy people will remain, and then we'll all be immune. And that'll be, I mean, that is frightening. And that's the kind of person who has the president's ear. But answer the question, should Joe Biden go to Kenosha? Maybe he should at one point, but I agree with Rosemary. He ought to go someplace that's a hot spot for the coronavirus and keep that one on the front burner.
Malcolm.
Well, I think that Joe Biden is making, I think it's a good move for him to go to Kenosha. You know, people have been saying, and the Trump administration was hawking last weekend, that he's still hiding in his basement. Well, he's not hiding in his basement now. I don't know, you know, how most people feel, but that speech that he gave yesterday was incredible.
Yeah,
I was shouting at my television set. It was extremely powerful. And unlike Hillary Clinton and some of the others in the Democratic Party, he took Trump on directly, personally. He called him a liar several times, you know, where he called out his lies specifically and identified them as lies. Then set the tone where he changed the narrative of what Trump was doing. And that's very important, that Biden shift the meta narrative that Trump tries to put out to the country of law and order, and make it very clear he's inciting the violence. So now I think that Biden did some pretty good judo yesterday. And by going to Kenosha and siding with the family of the gentleman who was shot, and the people who are protesting, and the city's administrators, while Trump goes and meets the policeman who did the shooting, I mean, it does show clearly the two sides to this story. But more importantly, Biden gets to shore up his base at the exact same time where he can now show that Trump is stoking the violence in that city. When look what he's doing, he's going to meet and, you know, essentially apologize for the policeman that shot this young man seven times in the back. And then, like he did on that insane Fox News interview yesterday, which I think he did to counter Joe Biden, where he came out in that interview and called it essentially the same as choking up on a putt on a golfing green. And even Laura Ingraham had to back him away from that and say, you're not comparing the shooting of a black man to choking up on a golf green. And Trump said no, and then went right back to supporting that analogy. He speaks only to himself
and his followers. And Biden has a really good opportunity to make this message go throughout the nation that, as you said, Rosemary mentioned it earlier, this, and so did Alan, this is Donald Trump's America. Biden said we had decreased crime 15% in his 8 years, and now there's this explosion because in Trump's America, to steal an analogy from It's a Wonderful Life, this is Pottersville, right? It's all liquor and bars and hookers. So we've destroyed this nice town, and you know, we're going to need more than Clarence the Angel to pull us out of this one.
I don't remember the hookers in It's a Wonderful Life. Did I miss something?
Yeah, they're there.
All right. got to watch that again, I guess. We have a lot of letters. Let me get to a couple before we have to go to a break. David writes, Rittenhouse shot three, people killing two. This is a failing of the Trump administration, and that is why we are talking about it. We need to keep the president talking off the cuff because he will continue to put his foot in his mouth. The virus is important, no doubt, but for those of us who fear we are at the edge of a second civil war, it is hard not to talk about much else. We go to George. How much did the Trump convoy through the streets of Portland remind me of the brown shirts and trucks coming during Kristallnacht?
Absolutely.
Marion says, if this self-defense argument isn't destroyed, every person brave enough to attempt to take down a gunman who is shooting people becomes a would-be murderer instead of a hero. How about the guy who shot Gabby Giffords? Were the people who took him down attempting murder? Trump's claim here needs to be shown for what it is. Murder is okay if you're shooting Democrats, especially black and brown. This won't be the end of this.
Okay, let's just explore that for a second. Yeah, go, please, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the comments that was made to Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, calling for civil war because, in his term, quote, now that one of ours has been shot. Well, you know, it's civil war when somebody gets killed from their side. And we don't even know if that was actually related to protests or an actual protester who, you know, they really haven't investigated that yet. But when civilians are killed left and right, bombs are left in synagogues, men are creating, you know, mailing pipe bombs to Democratic leaders, all that, that's nothing to them. You know, it's only when something happens to them that they start acting like the brown shirts.
Alan?
Yeah, you know, it is... There is so much disassembling that's going on here. You know, the idea that the president basically says that this guy who killed two people was this kid was defending himself. And we're looking into that. We're, quote, looking into that. I mean, it really is sickening.
Jimmy writes, Rosemary is right. Promoting civil chaos as the campaign strategy will only work if the media allows it. They love the ratings as much as Trump does. Matt says,
that's kind of harsh. That's
not what Rosemary said either. to blame the media is just ridiculous. When you have a president inciting riot and death, the media is supposed to what? Not cover it because it would hurt or help Joe Biden? Ridiculous. It's the president's behavior that you should be questioning, not the media. However, I do have to, what I am trying to say is that Biden cannot fall into the trap that is being set for him by this master manipulator and propagandist. He has set the agenda. We're talking violence. We've spent the whole morning so far on violence and not on incompetence, dishonesty, lying, his record, what's happening with the post office, all the things that in any other campaign with any other candidate would be the focus.
So I'm going to go back to what Alan said earlier, asked you a question of, you know, so how do you do it? How could Biden change the narrative? What could Biden do today to have everybody, have all of those cameras and reporters look at him instead of the sideshow that'll be going to Kenosha today?
Are you asking me specifically or in general?
Well, yeah. In general, yeah. But let's start with you.
Well, I sort of liked what Malcolm was saying. If he feels he has to go to Kenosha, then go with the family and the lawyers and spokesmen for the family who are talking about, I mean, the kids that watched that shooting. Let's see them. Sorry, that's a little bit exploitative. I'm getting Trump-like. But, yeah, turn the discussion into the state of affairs that has led to the killing. We're not talking about inequality and brutality. We're talking about violence, and we fall into that because it's right. No one likes violence. We say, oh, you shouldn't lose. People should be protesting. If there's anything worth protesting for, it's what's happening in this country right now. And if it gets out of hand, then let's look at why it's getting out of hand. Is it really left wingers who are out there? Is it really Antifa who's out there, or is it right wing protesters? That's not been looked at. And Joe Biden needs to bring that all out.
We get a couple.
Go ahead. I just want to say very quickly, I think what the American people who are now deciding who to vote for really want is somebody who will stand up to Donald Trump. Now, Trump himself called him Sleepy Joe, and basically saying he's a wimp. He can't do it. He won't stand up to me. There are people who are saying, hey, we shouldn't even have Biden doing a debate with Trump. But what they really want to know, what the American people really want to know, is the strength of Biden. And I think Biden has got to confront him every time he tells a lie. And on the major issue of violence, he needs to talk about it.
We have a couple letters on media and the media coverage that I'd like to get into. So let's take a break and we'll tackle those when we get back. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Stu writes to us and says, why doesn't the news media show the peaceful demonstrations primarily and merely mention that some extremists disrupted the calm? Stop showing the evil that Trump may have instigated and dwell on the legitimate demonstrations. If the major networks believe that Trump is a threat to democracy, stop showing the lying rants and spend the time showing legitimate events, speeches, and commitments to democracy from people on both sides of the aisle. Rosemary.
I would say that they do, and they're simply not as memorable as the scenes of violence and mayhem. That's just human nature. That's not the media.
I don't think that's so, Rosemary. As much as I love and respect you, of course, I think in fact you take five editors and you blindfold them and you put them in front of a series of scenarios, they're going to choose the ones that are the most rabid. I don't think that I honestly believe that. I hope you understand I'm not trying to make this stuff up. I just think that they know what will sell with the American people and that's what they give you.
Well, as Linda Ellerbe,
obviously it doesn't sell. We get nothing but criticism for sensationalizing and overhyping.
Right,
so it's not a smart move if that indeed is what is happening, which I maintain is not.
Well, I maintain it is, and I think, Rosemary, that there are two ways of looking at this. The question is, sure, people criticize you for it, but on the other hand, don't they also do what you want, what the editors want them to, which is to say, okay, one station has just a bunch of people protesting peacefully, which is great, and the other station says, okay, here's the chaos that's occurring. Who do you think is going to get the watchers?
People don't watch that stuff. They turn it off, Alan, and we see that increasingly. And what I'm talking about is when I covered schools, for example, years ago in Virginia, I always use this example because it was so glaring. And I wrote three stories one week. Two were absolutely glowing, a young woman who won a scholarship. She was an amazing woman. Next one was a program in a school that had no money at all, and it was so successful, all the rich schools were adopted. And the third was about I think she was a third grader who took a pair of scissors and stabbed a fellow classmate in the head with them in the middle of a class. And then we had a meeting of superintendents at the newspaper, and they all came in complaining about coverage of schools that was overwhelmingly negative. It was two-thirds positive that week. But the story that's negative and glaring and violent, that's the one that sticks in people's head. So if you're going to see Kenosha, if you're going to see George Floyd, you're not going to remember all the nice policemen who took kittens out of trees and brought little lost boys home and gave them ice cream. Norman Rockwell, like, you're going to remember the death and violence. And that's something the media will never get over. In point of fact, newspapers sell more copies when they do, like, graduation issues, stuff that people cut out and put on the refrigerator. People don't buy newspapers to read about violence in the streets. Not true.
Kathleen, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, the notion, Alan, that it's decisions are being made, they'll promote the violent protest over all the peaceful protests because it sells more. I really don't think editors think that way. I know that there are marketers and there's some notion of that, but I think it's news. I mean, I'd often get phone calls from people saying, why do you just tell all the negative stuff? You know, 50 airplanes take off and land safely and it's not news. One has a landing problem and they bring out the fire department because it might and put foam on the runway, and that's news. It's the aberration. It's the difference. And unfortunately, peaceful protests, and there's a lot of them, don't make as much news because they're normal now. People are coming out. People come out all the time to support very good causes, and they demonstrate their support for refugees or for frontline workers or for the military. And it gets casual coverage. But when something bad happens, that's news. That is the definition of news.
By the way, alas and alack, because, you know, your time and Rosemary's time as newspaper people, is to some degree eclipsed by the television. And you can tell me anything you want, and you can say it over and over and over again, and you could protest it. I'm telling you, if they take a picture of a bunch of people with signs up in the air, and it's too bad. I mean, I'm not supporting this, but what they're going to show, what you're going to get is, and then right on the next station is having, somebody bashing somebody in the head. That's going to be the one that most news directors are going to want on TV.
Well, that's the aberration, though. That's the unusual one. That's the one that is more... You know, it's a change. It's more, it means something. It means that protests that are ordinarily peaceful have gotten out of hand. But I agree. I think we've all said that the news media has a responsibility too to report what the genesis of these violent acts. I mean, you know, it occurs to me, as it occurs to a lot of people, that perhaps some of these protests that turn violent are not just, left-wing people who are trying to burn down the house. There could be right-wing people who are trying to kick off a civil war. And that can't be immediately answered, but it ought to be. I mean, it ought to be pursued. And that's a distinct possibility.
By the way, you are so right. Now, if you want to criticize the media, the way to do that is, it seems to me that the investigative reporters, people like Rosemary and others, should be looking out, trying their best to figure out who sent all those trucks into the city. Number one, with a common message. Number two, who fired the shots? Because it may well be that this was designed to provoke. And, in the beginning, I really had problems thinking that the people doing the firing, lighting the fires and doing that stuff were really people from the right. But I suspect the more I watch what Trump is trying to do here, the more I believe it's entirely possible.
Yeah, I agree with that. It probably is under investigation.
Malcolm?
It's all under investigation, but we know who sent those trucks into Portland. It was a radio talk show host who wasn't even from there. It's from Klamath. What I think you're going to see here is what they view as the success of this. And I'm monitoring, the channels of the Boogaloo right-wing extremist and all of these, pro-Rittenhouse, pro-gun right-wingers. Is that they're going to do this all over the place. They fully intend to organize these marches everywhere. And like I said, although it's anecdotal, the one guy in Great Barrington going back and forth, I'm sitting in Patisserie Lennox and I see this truck go back and forth six times in an hour. This is going to, I wouldn't be surprised if the White House and the Trump team starts coordinating these mass truck Trump rally. You know, the military, we have a term for this. It's called the Elephant March. You know, where they all go side by side, line abreast, and they just start, you know, waving their way through the cities. It to motivate their voters, to make it appear that they dominate the information space and that they dominate the physical ground. You know, this stuff happens. One interesting note, you know, I had an 8-foot Biden banner in front of my house last week, and someone came all the way up onto my property, several hundred feet, to steal it in the middle of the night in Columbia County. Like, that's going to matter, right? So their motivation for action is incumbent upon the White House giving them the green light. And that green light's out there. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see these multi-hundred vehicle marches and provocations pretty soon everywhere.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those, plus other topics as well. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Malcolm Nance, and Rosemary Armeo on the panel this morning. Again, we welcome your input, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Six minutes past 10 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here, former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo, and counterterrorism expert and bestselling author Malcolm Nance. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We now, a lot of letters I want to get to this morning. So let's do that if we can. And we can if I just get to the right screen. And there we go. Tracy writes, do you think if the protesters switch to sit-in protests instead of the parade type of protest, it might be safer for them? It would be hard to justify tear gassing people who are sitting peacefully. Trump's hacks can certainly drag them away, but the optics would not be good. John says, I think
I tweeted that the other day.
Did you?
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I tweeted about that the other day where I said, now we're at a point where to change the narrative, the protesters should adopt the Martin Luther King, Gandhi, passive, you know, nonviolence technique. Link arms, link legs, have a seat. You know, that way you can break the meta narrative about who's doing the violence, much of which is being done by right-wing extremists and some anarchists who want to see those videos that Roseberry was talking about. You know, they want to see the violence.
Let's move on to other letters and check in with John, who says, I think that readers, listeners, and watchers need to remember that news coverage is a business and not a public service.
No, it isn't. It's both. That's why there's constitutional protections for it.
Debbie,
yes.
Well, somebody's going to say that's cynical, but others will say, yes, that's correct.
Well, it is a public service. Wouldn't you think that news coverage is a public service? And that's what motivates. I mean, a reporter doesn't make a lot of money. They're not doing it to make money. They're doing it because they have a dedication to public service. They could go make more money doing PR or handling social media for a candidate or something. I mean, it is a dedicated public service that's going on when people cover news.
Media bashing also plays to Trump's advantage, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we certainly know that. The enemy of the people.
Yeah, I mean, that idea that somehow we're like a GM, we operate that way, media does not, and it's silly, and that's why there's a First Amendment that protects freedom of the press, not freedom of automakers or steelmakers.
Debbie writes and says, as important as protesting against police violence and inequality is, would it be wise for the quiet demonstrations until after the election so as to limit the opportunity for Trump's fear-mongering?
Wait. Would it be wise to what until after?
To wait until after the election.
Oh, I see. To have.
Why is no one discussing, asks Paula, the fact that the boy's mother drove him across state lines to hunt down protesters because that's what the kid did? She should be charged with murder as well. I think Malcolm made that exact point.
Malcolm, we learned that from Malcolm today, too.
Joe Biden's speech on Trump stoking the flames of violence was terrific. Now Kamala Harris needs to go out and speak to the protesters about not falling into the trap of giving the president more fodder for his narrative that it's raging left-wing rioters who Americans need to fear. Where is she?
Well, we have to at least assume that they are programming her and deciding how much they want to use her, right?
Yeah.
It's not her decision.
Yeah.
Malcolm?
Well, I'll tell you what. I sure hope that they are programming to launch her today like a cruise missile at Trump. Because if you haven't seen, for the benefit of your listeners, that insane interview Trump did last night with Laura Ingraham, one, okay, don't drink coffee while you're watching it. You'll be spitting it out every 10 seconds. But Trump said some phenomenally crazy things in there, and some of which were horribly anti-Semitic. For example, he said that he believes Joe Biden doesn't control anything, but that he is literally being controlled by, quote, shadowy forces in the background of people whose names you don't know, and that these shadowy forces were running the Democratic Party and were setting the cities on fire. If anybody want to chime in about where that trope comes from, it sounds like he's talking about, you know, the Rothschilds and the Soroses and essentially the grand Jewish conspiracy that the Nazis pushed all during World War II and the protocols of the Elders of Zion. I can't believe that no one this morning in the media didn't have that as story number one. And then the second one was, people are telling him that full airplanes are full of people in black clothes flying from city to city to organize rioters. I mean, this stuff is crazy. The president's delusional. Let's just put that out there. A president of the United States is literally living in some fever dream alternate reality.
What makes you think he's delusional? The fact of the matter is he could well know exactly what he's doing, Malcolm, and do it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, he doesn't have to believe it. In fact, I don't think he does believe it.
You know, I know we have this discussion all the time. I agree with you. I believe he's evil, but evil fuels his crazy. So for the one thing that's him just being, Dr. No. The other side is that when he reaches these brilliant ideas, he opens his mouth as to what he truly believes. I think it is calculated. I think there's certainly a machine behind him called the Republican Party. And they advise him about when's the best time to do things. But last night, all those conversations he's having to himself, against his pillow, came out. And even Laura Ingraham had to stop him and call some of what he said conspiracy theory. But this is, I felt this morning that was a phenomenally, phenomenally dangerous point in American history because he truly believes his nuttiness.
I think he truly believes his ability to put it over, but I don't think he truly believes it. See, that's where you and I think, may differ, Malcolm. I think his nuttiness, the fact that he's crazy, is that he thinks he can do this and get away with it while he knows full well that he's wrong. That's just the difference we have here.
Yeah. Let me just give you just one little touch of spy tradecraft here. I worked at the National Security Agency, so I spent like 20-plus years listening to people. And we have a term that we call the third conversation, where based on the fluidity of the person who's talking, how they use words and couch terms, you can tell the actual conversation they had with another person where they acquired that information. I'm sure some
you know, professional linguistics professor is listening right now. But I watched that video. He truly believes that stuff that he said, and he adopted it from someone else who told him these nutty stories, and he incorporated that into his worldview. If I were writing this up about Saddam Hussein, I would be doing a flash traffic warning that a country is about to be invaded or that a major city in Iraq is about to be razed to the ground.
I hear you, and you are the pro.
All right, let's go back to...
Minecraft, less than off.
I go back to the letters. Kathleen says Democrats and most liberals wanted to hear what Biden said about Trump. Joe did bring up the virus prominently. He labeled the chaos as Trump's America. Perfect wording, perfect tone. Then Don says, I agree with Alan. Biden is right to forcefully respond to Trump's law and order message regarding the mayhem that was accompanied some that has accompanied some on the racial justice protest. He's right because it's an important issue that causes justifiable voter concern, and he's right because this is an issue Biden is well positioned to turn in his favor. Only Biden has the credibility to support peaceful racial justice protests while condemning arson, violence, and looting on the left and armed vigilantism on the right. That's a winning message that Trump is incapable of delivering.
Yes, and you know what, while we're at it, while we're talking about who's standing on the sidelines and the rest, there is the question of the rank-and-file Republicans, particularly the Republican senators, who sooner or later are going to have to meet their maker. There's no question about it. And they are doing nothing, despite the fact that they go home and talk to their families about Trump and all of his off-putting stuff. So this question of these Republicans who are standing by silently, when history records all of this stuff, it'll be interesting to see if they do the same thing with them that they've done with the enablers back in the 30s.
Matt says Trump's suggestion to that the Rittenhouse may have been acting in self-defense in killing two protesters evidences his inability to keep his nose out of places where it does not belong, namely our legal system. We have a legal system that will investigate and, if warranted, prosecute Rittenhouse. Trump's actions demonstrate his utter disdain for our legal system. Glenn says, ironic.
Here's another little tidbit for you.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, here's another little tidbit for you from that case. His lawyer today is going to argue in court that he cannot be prosecuted because he was a member of, quote unquote, a well-regulated militia, and that the Second Amendment defended his right to kill people. Not joking.
That's different than the president saying that he fell. Glenn says, ironically, that Trump screams about rampant crime while he has surrounded himself with numerous quote-unquote advisors who have been found guilty of crimes. Alyssa says, where is the help promised by Mike Bloomberg? He had excellent ads while still in the race. You have given two fantastic ideas for ads, split screen showing the ISIS fighters and Trump parade, and split screen for the Sandy Hook shooter and the Kenosha shooter. Alan has also suggested simply play back Trump's own words. So much out there to fire back at him. Another Michael says, Biden needs to be quiet. The guy just can't stop hurting his chances. Last week, he upset a lot of people with his policy to remove tax benefits for retirement accounts. Anyone on that?
Well, he's got to speak out. I mean, you know, he's getting a ton of criticism from Democrats who don't want him to fuel that, you know, hanging out in the basement, jive that Trump is doing. And he's got to speak out. The question I had was, does anyone know the Pittsburgh speech yesterday? Was there a big audience? Were they social distancing? Did they have masks on? I mean, should Biden kind of just be drawing big crowds? Should he fly to airports and start bringing in big crowds just like Trump? I mean, this is a tough one, because if he doesn't do that, he's going to fuel that whole notion of him hiding out.
Or responsibility.
No, he was at a factory yesterday. Yeah. There was no crowd.
Right. So, I mean, it's complicated. He's going to have difficulty, and he is having difficulty sort of you know, satisfying the people in the Democratic Party who are trying to urge him to get out there, also demonstrating responsibility, and also
exactly.
Yeah, I mean it's tough. It is really tough.
Let's see. Carolyn says, why haven't we heard much about the two men killed by Kyle Rittenhouse? I've been hearing lots about the person who killed in Portland who belonged to a far right group. We talked about it last week. There was I believe a 25-year-old and a 36-year-old who were killed, both fathers and both from the region, from the area, who were part of the protests. But there
this
have been
on MSNBC. The last 2 hours kicked off with overviews about the lives of the victims.
So we then go to another story, and we're changing gears here and talking about the ever sexy topic of tax deferrals. So federal workers will have taxes deferred under Trump's order, sparking outcry. They're being treated as a guinea pig. Few businesses so far have shown interest in adopting Trump's payroll tax deferral, so the U.S. government will implement an across-the-board payroll tax deferral for about 1.3 million federal employees starting in mid-September, potentially forcing these workers to take a temporary financial boost now that they will have to repay next year. The policy, confirmed Monday by a senior administration official, comes in response to a widely panned policy directive issued by President Trump earlier in August. Unions have sharply criticized the government's decision, fearing federal workers may not have a choice in whether to take the deferral, resulting in them receiving smaller paychecks in 2021 until the past due taxes are paid off. So, Trump's order specifically targets the 6.2% tax that employers deduct from their workers' wages so the government can fund Social Security. His directive postpones payment of those taxes until January, at which point employers are required to start collecting back what is owed, perhaps by withholding double the amount that they usually take until May. The deferral applies only to people who earn up to $4,000 on a biweekly basis, less than $104,000 annually. Trump in recent weeks had promised to terminate the tax bills Americans rack up during that time, hoping to spare workers from having to repay those debts down the road. But he can't cut taxes unilaterally, and his pledge has earned virtually no support on Capitol Hill, where lawmakers in both parties have been reluctant to touch the funding source for the country's cash-starved retirement programs and are unlikely to do so before potentially millions of workers' tax bills are due.
So, you know, every time...
I
was just going to say, every time this comes up, somebody points out that it's the people that don't have paychecks that really need the help. It's not the people who actually have pay coming in. Sure, they probably have a few stresses, but the people who are not taking a paycheck during this terrible period of unemployment and economic slump are the people that we have to help. And where's the help for them? I mean, there's no action on this bill. Congress isn't even in session.
And there's the President of the United States, and he's sitting there, he's got his head in his hand, and he's thinking, If I go after the federal workers, what's the first question I'm going to ask myself? Are those people going to vote for me? No. No, they will not. And so, therefore, screw them. Anything we can get out of them is good.
Mm-hmm. Rosemary?
Yeah. I think Alan has it right on he's hit the nail right on the head. I am amazed at how Trump does not regard the constitutionality or even the morality of any of his acts. If he wants to do it, he does it. He wants to play hallelujah. He doesn't care if Leonard Cohen's estate sues him or not. This is the same thing. He has had this thing in for the payroll tax for years. We've heard him say this all during before the closure of the government over the wall, he was talking about payroll taxes. And I think his real goal is absolutely Social Security. And so he's doing it now, even though there was no support for months when he touted this as a way to deal with the COVID economic emergency. So he's done it anyway, and it's for his own purposes. And he gets away with it, and he's going to get away with it now, too, I suspect.
Well, he won't get away with it, and if the Congress doesn't go along.
People are not going to be able to pay it back next year, and so Congress, in an act of mercy, will forgive the debt, and that means the hit is to Social Security. So he will get away with it. I predict it.
Hmm. All right.
Well, you know, Joe Biden specifically mentioned this in his speech yesterday, which, again, I thought that speech was a pummeling. He brought to light things most Americans have never heard, and that this payroll tax will gut, you know, amnesty or whatever he's going to do, shutting off, will gut Social Security. They said the actuary said by 2023. And by bringing that up, I think that's a lethal subject. Trump just likes the idea of, like you said, just playing with toys, you know, screwing with government. But now Biden has a quite a dagger to go after him with, if he can get the traction on this, that, hey, you know, your Social Security, all you Trump supporters who are retired.
I want to hear Biden talking about that. I think that is there. And of course he doesn't care if he screws up Social Security. Did he care about health care? Does he care about that? No. He likes doing this. It's chaos. And so far, because it's so brazen and it doesn't make any sense, it isn't logical. So he gets away with it, and he's going to continue to until someone somewhere would be Republicans in Congress would be nice if they stopped him.
Well, he's building a time bomb into this, too, because if these federal workers don't get their payroll deductions taken out between now and the end of the year, Trump does not get elected. It's going to be under Biden's leadership that they get double assessed to catch up.
Correct.
And it'll just anger them, and people will be all upset and be blaming Biden.
Which is why I'm almost sure if Trump is in, or even if Biden is in, Congress is going to end up forgiving anything that's collected now, which is adds up to a loss for Social Security.
Right.
Social Security, we were always told, was the third rail of American politics. I mean, for those who don't know about the subway system, the third rail, so you get electric.
When you get a fake billionaire, what does he care about third rails? He doesn't ride the subway.
Worse than that, I think he loves that it's the third rail, that he can do what no one else has. He loves making those boasts, and now here he is. He's going to do what no other Republican has been able to do, and the miscalled entitlement programs.
But he doesn't.
Right, so he's also going after bucket of government money. Healthcare, Social Security, those pesky schools, this is untapped money that Trump and his rich supporters have never been able to get at.
Right.
Now they own the keys to the vault.
Right.
All right. I want to make one note. We have to break here in a second, but we've been getting a lot of letters. You know, you all know the rule here where we can be talking about the most important things in the world, and then if we mention, I don't know, some like weird TV show, that's what people want to talk about, and that's fine. But a lot of people have been very upset that we haven't announced who the music is and what the music is this morning, and that's my bad. I normally mention it at 9:30, but it's Seiji Ozawa and the BSO, the Boston Symphony Orchestra. The reason we were playing it this morning is because it is Seiji Ozawa's 85th birthday, 85 years old.
Absolutely.
So that is the music we are playing. That is what we're playing. It's off of an album called Seiji Ozawa and the BSO, and again, playing it for the 85th birthday celebration. We have a playlist on our website. It is wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable, and all of the music that we play on the program you can find there and find out what it is. And so even if you want to know more information as to what the exact cut was, well, you can find out that by going to the website. All right. We have about a minute to go here, and I don't want to start another story quite yet. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, then can I tell a story really fast?
Please
in a
do.
Minute?
Yeah.
I don't know. As you know, Kim, who is Carolyn, who is James Taylor's wife, used to be the rep for the Boston Symphony, and she said to me one day when I was interviewing Seiji Ozawa, with Clarence Fanto of the Eagle, a very good friend of mine, she said, ask him about the Red Sox. So I tell him about the Red Sox. His face lights up, and he starts to talk about Francona and the Red Sox. And Clarence asks him a very good musical question, like, what about the high C? And And he turns around and says, yes, yes. He said, but about those Red Sox. So there's some.
The power of sport. Yes. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We do welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we will get to those as we go through our last round this morning, our last 20 minutes together, when we come back on the other side of news. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo. I think you could say it by now. Rosemary Armeo on the panel this morning. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion and our last go-round. And we thank you for being with us, Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo, making up the panel this morning. All right, let's see. We want to get to a couple of other topics here before our time together ends. I would like to get to the issue of the one of the stories that Rosemary mentioned earlier, that this was something that had slipped through the cracks. So, and that is the post office story. Remember that one? What happened there? Yeah. So now they want Louis DeJoy to come back and find out more information, because they don't feel that the information they got was correct or accurate. This is the Democrats for the House Committee on Oversight and Reform say that they are furious over this, and they want to make sure that they get the information that they are supposed to get. And there is some question as to whether that will actually happen, or will happen, rather. Rosemary, what do you think?
Well, I want Congress, and I think it looks like they're beginning to actually do this, to carry out oversight. The problems with the post office have been well documented even before the controversy with DeJoy started. And it is not from lack of efficiency or problems with too many sorting machines, the kinds of things he says he's dealing with. It comes from the way it's structured. And that is plainly something that Congress can change. Whether they will actually be able to with Republicans in control of the Senate, I doubt. But that's where the attention ought to be, and where they need to start paying attention. The idea that it has to be fully, it's a public service, but it has to be fully funded by its own activities is not possible, and still maintain the level of service we get from the post office. That needs to be recognized, and change is needed. I think that Trump, in a way, in an odd, offhanded way, did a service pointing out that it can't be run that way anymore, and we need to make fixes. But on the other hand, while I'm happy that this, it looks like Congress is beginning, I don't think they can really accomplish anything because of the problem with Republicans being in charge.
The one thing I meant to mention is that the House committee is planning to subpoena DeJoy on Wednesday for withholding documents from Congress, escalating that confrontation. And the documents, they basically want to know if there were any political discussions. They want to know what happened to the machines that were taken out and why were they taken out, and also has some of the damage that's already been done, even though they said everything's been put on hold, has they want documentation on where we are right now as compared to before. So, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, appropriately, this kind of oversight now will underscore this as one of the issues. But I do worry that it's not the big issue. I think the big issues are, racial unrest in America and the, of course, the coronavirus and the mishandling of it. And you just worry that people don't have an attention span. Maybe they just need some of those Mike Bloomberg-funded commercials that were promised that just bullet all this off. I haven't seen a lot of commercials. I'm not a big watcher of network television, but it just seems like this is just one more bullet point when you try to make the case of what's the situation in Donald Trump's America now.
Alan?
Oh, it is what it is, as we have all said so many times. He's not going to change. He's going to continue to do that. I really appreciated Rosemary's intervention earlier in the program about what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. And when it comes to the post office, for example, it really is horrible that they are getting away with it. So DeGioia comes up and he says, oh, well, we're fixing everything. Everything's going to be all right. And everybody nods their head, and it isn't. So this is typical, and it's right out of the playbook.
Malcolm.
Well, I think you're...
All right. Say that again. Go ahead. Did we lose Malcolm? Did I lose Malcolm? All right. We have him on a phone line, so there's no real normal reason that should happen. But let's wait. And all right. Well, we'll check on Malcolm and see what is going on there. We hope that we can get him back and soon. Malcolm, are you back? No? All right.
Joe, can I talk while Malcolm was waiting for him?
I will love you if you do.
Okay. I just want to say, and he can speak to this too, I think it isn't just the post office that's an agency that we're losing that I worry about, but it's the CDC, the FDA, the Weather Service. Trump has his head, as the head of the executive branch, he's affected and impacted in a bad way all of those agencies. And if we've lost trust in them, there's a reason for it. They're doing his bidding instead of acting independently. We've got to change that. There has to be some strengthening by Congress to protect them from presidential meddling.
Malcolm, did we get you? Are you back?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Go back in the post office.
Yeah. DeJoy's job was to dismantle the post office. I mean, he's a heavy investor in UPS and FedEx. And he came in and set up his quote-unquote efficiencies. But he made it clear it's never going back as long as he's there. So the damage has been done. And for Congress to come in now and do their quote-unquote oversight is awesome. But until, maybe they're holding their fire till after November. But the only oversight that I think is acceptable is investigating people for criminal activity. And it's in the charter. There's a law that says you cannot deliberately withhold, obstruct, or slow down the mail, which he apparently has done. You know, an email is going to come out with his orders on it, right? Where he was told to do it. So it's just a question of when that happens. But if they win, say goodbye to the post office.
Anybody else on that? All right. Mike, were you going to say something? No?
No. I think it's well covered.
Excellent. says you. All I do,
Joe, is think of my mom when she was alive in Florida, standing by the post, standing by her mailbox, waiting for her Social Security check to show up. And if it didn't show up on a particular day, she was on the phone calling everybody and everything to make it happen. People really depend on that post office.
That they do. Let's talk about, we've brought this up before, and I'm interested in talking a little bit about it, and that is the reopening of schools and even what we've been seeing on college campuses lately. New York City is delaying start of school to ready for in-person classes. The city's 1.1 million children will not have any in-person classes until September 21st. Most children will not start remote classes until that date as well. Meanwhile, of course, we've all been reading the stories of campuses across the country, college campuses that are closing, that have opened and then closed, or have gone to remote learning for 2 weeks. The latest is out of Oneonta here in New York, but in universities across the country. Temple University just made an announcement as well. And so my question is, have we learned anything in this? Is it too early to tell? Or are we going to, is this the way things are going to be going throughout the school year? Mike?
Yeah, I think that this is exactly how things are going to be going. You're going to have different variations in the capital region. I saw today that Schenectady, where I live, is not going to have 7th through 12th grade kids return to the classrooms right away. It's going to be for the younger students in a very controlled hybrid kind of a situation, and then they'll gradually roll into it. Others are going to plow into it, and where it succeeds, where different programs succeeds, others are going to copy it, and where it doesn't work, others are going to pull away from it. We are learning how to deal with this virus before we come up with a way to get rid of it. And that's only, that makes sense to me. And educators, teachers, organizations, you know, parents, students, everybody's got a huge stake in this, of course. And it is, you know, if someone makes it work, let's do what they do. And I think we're going to see a lot of that.
How do you make it work? That's the interesting question.
Some small situations, you know, where you have small numbers of kids returning in very controlled situations where they bring their lunches in and they maintain social distance. There's a routine testing. There's underscoring to the parents at home that if there's any breach or exposure of their children, they need to report it and hold the children. I mean, this is the way, this is the new normal until there is a, until there really is a vaccine out there.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I don't know. I would love for there to be, I can't believe we're still dealing with this in August. You know, when it started in March, it seemed like it would be a short-term kind of adventure, something we've never done before. And now it's a long slog, and it's plain that it's going to continue. And I worry about the vaccine because is it safe? Trump's rushing things. That makes me very, very nervous. And yet I don't want to be an anti-vaxxer. I totally believe in vaccines. I'm even considering a flu shot for the first time ever. And as for schools, it's such a hard thing to know. Kids need to be socializing and in classes, and yet they can't right now. They risk death to do that. So I think what Mike said is right, that flexibility and patience and just plain old common sense would go a long way. This is not a cultural war. This is not a political statement about whether you wear a mask or go to a party or not. It's just freaking common sense. And calmness would go a long way towards making this work.
Alan?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, we have three grandchildren. They are all in some kind of an educational place, in two, one in New Orleans, the other two in New Jersey, and they go every day, and they are very, very careful. Everybody wears masks. Everybody goes in. The parents are online all day long with them to make sure that there's nothing askance, because so it's happening in some places, and it's happening in a safe way, at least so far.
Malcolm.
Oh, you know, I feel strongly both ways.
Exactly. It's exactly right.
Right.
The biggest problem we're going to have here when it comes to the case of the vaccine is not so much the efficiency of this vaccine, but the safety of it due to what's being rushed. I really think that everything that we're discussing now has to take place within the realm of Donald Trump's, you know, Ahab-like obsession of announcing by November 3rd that he has the cure to coronavirus. And I wouldn't trust it as far as I can throw it. Dr. Fauci doesn't come to the White House anymore. He's been sidelined. They're now pushing all these other things as cures. It's been snake oil since day one. And until the CDC and another CDC gets an independent review of this, I'm going to be very skeptical of it. And I want it. I mean, I want this whole world to go back to normal. But, you know, when it comes to Donald Trump handling something related to my life, mm-hmm. Can't trust it.
Malcolm, I have 25 seconds for you to talk about an event you have coming up.
Yeah, this Sunday at 7 p.m., if you go online, I'm going to be taking part in a Zoom discussion and presentation with the guy they call the Norman Rockwell of the Resistance, Michael D'Antuono. You couldn't believe this guy's art. I mean, he does, Black Lives Matter and Trump-related art. It really looks like Norman Rockwell stuff. But it'll be September 6th, 7 p.m., and you can go to the website Democ, D-E-M-O-C-S, laststand.org. And we will be discussing democracy's last stand.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Good luck with that. Have fun. Thanks for being with us. Alan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Malcolm, Mike, and Rosemary, thank you as well. We'll
thank
be
you.
Right back with the Congressional Corner after this.